Drop a line and catch some fresh fish. It's more of Go Fish with Mike Buck. Brought to you by POP Fishing and Marine at Pier 38 in Honolulu's Fishing Village. Right here on AM 690 KHNR.
Okay, where the rubber meets the road, I've been telling you that there's a project. And it involves taking a look and evaluating fishery resources using high-techery. A high, really, really, really interesting video surveys, if you will, on an ongoing basis. And what's that all about? Well, it's another way your console is at work. And first of all, we're going to explain what this project is. And to help us out with that is Mark Mitsuyasu, who's been here before. He's a program officer with the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, as well as a number of other things. You probably have about 41 hats, you know, in the big thing. But I know that a lot of people really, they see something and they think, it looks good in writing, but what really is this thing? So obviously, if the council is going to fund this, it must be meaningful to us at the council. Explain a little bit about what these evaluations are designed to do.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Glad to be back.
I got to give you your own parking stall in the building.
I thought you did that the last time. No. As you know, what we try to do is manage fisheries, and we need information to manage fisheries, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of time we hear from the fishery scientists, they give us stock assessments, and then when we go out to the community, the question is, well, you know, what about this? Or did you account for the weather? Or did you account for seasonality? Or did you, you know? And so the fishermen have a ton of information. And a lot of times that's referred to as empirical knowledge.
Yep.
Because you've been doing it forever.
Sometimes they're willing to part with it. Sometimes they're not.
Right. There's those issues. Yeah. And so the basis for this particular study was twofold. One, it was to try and look at an area where fishermen have traditional knowledge of an mm-hmm. area with regards to species abundance and those type of things, and then document that and then go out and see if we can monitor it using more contemporary methods, and in this case some new methods with video, to try and track and see how well that lines up to what people think.
Okay, well, let me tell you that when we were at the last Fishers Forum, there were some presentations made on stock surveys by some young Wahinis, scientists.
Yes.
Extremely impressive. I mean, the way these people can make their ability mesh with our quest for knowledge was truly terrific. But you're right. There were people that said, okay, what does this 22-year-old little Wahini from UH know about, you know, when Moy come to the rock in my neighborhood, right?
Right.
So in other words, what you're talking about is, and the reason why the council is funding this, is to use it as another tool to make even more accurate some of the surveys we've done. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And this is happening not only nationally, but I think across the world, where people are recognizing, scientists are recognizing that there is a lot of information and value in what the fishing community has, and trying to bring that into that stock assessment or modern assessment methods would help to improve our knowledge.
Yeah, and that's where this comes in, and this is why it's exciting, because like Mark was saying, everybody, there's a lot of us that remember the old Moy hole from a long time ago, and we know how to get back there every year. We used to use landmarks, now we use the GPS. Well, you know, that stuff is only valuable on the street where you guys are. But when you bring it in and throw it into the pot here, when it really helps. And that's where we get to introduce our other guest today. My friend Dean Satsui, for a long time, has been, you know, where the rubber meets the road with regards to the technology of it. And as a videographer, first of all, I'm really jealous, because back in the days when I had my television show, we had like Stanley steamers for cameras, right? But now, Dean, you guys got the hot rod stuff. How's Hawaii Goes Fishing doing?
It's doing pretty good. You know, we've got some more episodes coming up this year. We just put out 3 on the air and try to get a wide variety of stuff.
People think it's easy, right?
Just shoot and, you know, stick it on the air and then it's ready to go. But there's really a ton of work to do. But no, we're not going to go into that.
I do want to tell you that, you know, we've seen, I guess, technology really blossoming. I mean, now with the high def, you know, easy kind cameras and everything else, everybody can be a videographer. We actually do have a lot of that, but yet your specific skill set was called upon to be a part of this project. How did you get looped into this thing, and what are you doing?
Yeah, because a while back, I was talking to Clay Tam. Clay Tam is a biologist with the Pacific Islands Fisheries Group, and we're talking about how these small GoPro cameras can be deployed and just sit there quietly and be able to observe whatever's going on. What's going on without scaring the fish off. Because normally when you do a survey, let's say a stock assessment in littoral waters, you're going to do a cred survey, a bunch of divers are going to go swim
along. I got hyperventilating, I got bubbles going all over the place.
And then what do the fish do? They run away, right?
Of course.
So now you got to interpolate what your stock is. This way, you go down and just without disturbing anything, you drop the camera and just let it sit there for an hour, and it's taking pictures every 30 seconds, and then you come back and you take a look at what you got.
Are you as blown away as I am at the, it seems like, exponential growth in the small stuff that really works and it really is good?
Oh yeah, it's impressive. Impressive, and it's, you know, it's not expensive, and the image quality is amazing. What we've found in this survey is that there are really literally thousands of fish in this one survey. And because we've been doing these observations over a year, we get to see how it changes.
Do you think, Mark, that this might impact the council's reporting state of the fisheries and everybody else's, that, you know what, we may have underestimated or overestimated based on this additional information? Is it helpful?
I think that's too early to tell. Mm-hmm. The idea behind this was really to see if that, first of all, is to try and check to see how the traditional knowledge lines up with monitoring over a year. The other was to see if this technology can be used in the way that Dean had explained, because like you said earlier, Dean, and to do the traditional transects, they used to put these lines under the water.
Yeah, I remember them. We did that for black coral. We did that for the crown thorn starfish, all kinds of different things, right?
So more recently, they do the stationary point. So the diver just goes down. Instead of swimming a line, they sit there and they observe, kind of like what the cameras are doing here. And so
it's like sitting at a bus stop. Right?
Yeah, just watching the bus go by. Right. And then, but you wanted to be able to do it in a statistically sound way so that the data and information you do get is useful to evaluate.
Okay, we talked earlier in the introduction. I was talking about Moanalua Bay. This is where some of this early stuff is done. Explain before we ask Dean about the technical side of this some more. What these COAs are? What does that mean when we talk about? Okay, we're gonna go and check out this is a COA resource over here. What is that?
Well, basically, you're talking about a fish house. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you're talking about areas in the water that have habitat that fish like. And some areas are better than other areas. And typically, you know, people who go fishing, they know where fish like to hang out. And so these areas, they refer to as fish houses or koas.
Yeah, and so that's why, for instance, in Moanalua Bay, they call one area over there turtles. Not because it looks like or shaped like a turtle, but that's where turtles are.
Right.
So this is the same thing. Now, Dean, what sort of demand, though, gets put on, say, your expertise when you're explaining, okay, this is the area here that we're going to do, and how you design, okay, what we're going to put where to capture the information that they're looking for?
Okay. First of all, I got to give a lot of credit to Teddy Williams. He's been diving that area for 40, 50 years, maybe.
Yeah, so he's got a little anecdotal stuff going himself.
Yeah. So he and Makani are kind of spearheading the, you know, where the koas are and where we're going to study. So we found this one koa, and that Teddy pointed out, and it was divided up into 10-meter blocks.
Okay.
And so, was that Malloy? Okay. Yeah. Malloy came up with a bunch of random numbers, and that determines where we drop these 10.
By the way, he's the ecosystem scientist with Westpac that came. I forget where he came from, but he's an amazing guy, and he's really been sharing a lot with you guys, right?
No, and he's, he has.
So humble.
Very good.
He's got tremendous science background.
Interestingly enough, because I forget where he comes from. Is it Micronesia?
No, American Samoa. American Samoa. He was there for 10 years as a senior scientist.
Yeah, but when he comes back up here, he says, that's how we learned at the council, and I'm sure, Dean, you guys on your travels learned this stuff too. Our situations and our problems and concerns are really very similar no matter where you go in the Pacific. So that being said, and Makani, of course, is a fisherman.
Makani Christensen.
So it's everybody is a stakeholder here. So, I mean, everybody's out looking after the same thing. And yet the capture is the part that interests me. How do you capture this stuff?
Yeah, so they'll do a visual assessment, come up with a poundage. And then what I'm doing is I'm prepping these cameras. I designed this drop cam rig where we can just, as soon as we get to the spot, we'll just drop it overboard.
Yep.
Camera just goes down. It's running the whole time, shooting.
Okay. Now explain this, because let's talk about this like it's a lunar landing, okay?
Yeah.
You have to have reasonable expectations that you drop this thing in the water, it's going to go down and sit there.
Yeah, it's going to sit there. So there's a weight on the bottom that pretty much anchors it in place. There's a fiberglass wand that supports the camera about 5 feet off the bottom.
Okay, so it's the weight's going to the bottom, and there's a little bit of flotation, but not enough to come back up, so it just sort of hangs there.
Yeah. And the reason for the fiberglass wand is so that the camera doesn't twist and pan all over the place. Once it sits on the bottom, it's pointing in a specific direction. It'll stay there more or less.
Hey, how cool is that, Mark? Yeah. You know, when you think about it. So, I mean, everybody knows.
Backyard technology with a table saw.
Yeah, and I don't know where you all go to get your GoPros, but I do know that I spend a lot of time down at Bike Factory with Wally and the gang because of the different gadgets that they have for mine. And I know that must be the same thing. So for you, it must be like it's a shopping spree. You get to do all this stuff. What sort of, if any, budgetary restrictions were there? What do they deal you with? Okay, don't over-design, you know, give us something we can afford.
Yeah, stuff was all off the shelf you know, a lot of sweat equity. Mm-hmm. So I basically designed and built the rigs myself.
Yeah.
When we picked up the GoPros, I got a talk to Sterling at Hanapa.
Yep.
And I said, hey, I want to get these GoPros. And he says, how many? Well, I would need 18 of them.
What?
That's like customer of the year. I'm like,
yeah, really?
Yeah. But seriously, so what he's explaining is that this camera goes down with the weight, the wand, and it stays sort of pointing in one direction.
Right.
Okay, now you got, 330 other degrees here. Mm-hmm. So how do you use that information to extrapolate what the rest of the story is? Multiple cameras?
Yeah, right. So each monitoring session, they do one a month, and we try to keep on the same lunar cycle and on the same tide.
As consistent as they can be.
And so for each drop day, they're doing 10 of these cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So in this grid that Dean had mentioned,
mm-hmm.
there's, 100 grids or something. And so randomly you select 10 of the grids within this monitoring area.
Okay.
And so there's that randomness, and there's also the randomness of the angle of the camera in which it's looking.
Okay. That's where Dean's expertise comes in with regarding to, okay, wait a minute. Here's a technical question. I know a lot of you out there, you're hearing us talking about multiple cameras. Once this information has been compiled and you've got it, then comes, okay, how do we interpret it? How do we look at it? How do you do that?
Yeah, so I give that to Megan Putz at what's it?
She's an HPU graduate student.
I met her.
Yeah.
And so
she does the fish count.
Yeah, because eventually, now the fish counts are one thing, but eventually you're also going to be able to present this in sort of a presentation so somebody can see the fruits of the labor.
Yeah,
in other words, like a half hour, an hour. Yes. This is this call of this day or whatever.
Right, and so Megan takes that information from the cameras that Dean deploys and retrieves, and so she has 10 sets of data from each camera, and then she, out of that hour long session, she's randomly selecting so many snippets from different time series, and those are randomly selected too.
Okay.
And then she goes through and she looks at the fish count and the fish diversity. And so she is not only doing this for this project, she has another project. excuse me. She has another project that she's doing for her graduate work that's looking at precious corals off the Big Island
for
the submersible.
That is really key. Right. But see, there's another thing. And in this Mauna Bay study, I was reading some material about a specific species.
Right.
Okay, so let's take a look at maybe one of them was Ta'api. Now, I don't know what that encompassed, but that's it would seem to me that a large pile of Ta'api would be ranging over a large area. So this area that you're talking about, once again, so people can understand it, Dean, is about how big?
Okay, so this area is probably about 100 yards by 50 yards
Okay, so pretty good. It's bigger than a football field.
Yeah.
Or about the same size.
About the same size as football field. Yeah. Maybe a little bit smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a number of different species they're looking at. Red veke, white veke. Mm-hmm. They're looking at ta'ape, whatever's there. Yeah, mm-hmm. And then whatever predators that might be coming through as well.
But, you know, what we talk about often on the program and in other things, Mark, is that, you know, you can have a kapu or a no-take zone or this or that, but the fish is not quite sure where he is. I mean, he's just going on his thing. So how does science or how does, Megan or whoever is going to put that stuff together, how do they take a look at that and say, okay, this is this area. Now, last time we took it, there were no top here. Now there's really plenty. That means that they came from right over there, but, you know, this is, in other words, this is long haul. This isn't one little glimpse. You have to go back and back and back to verify.
Right.
This.
You need a long-term time series for that. This kind of monitoring. And and really, like I mentioned in the beginning, this is more of a pilot to test the technology to see if it does work. And if it does work or maybe needs to be modified in some way or improved, then maybe that can be deployed in a broader scale, maybe island-wide.
Well, I was going to say, listen, we know that we always use models of other things from other places to do our work. It seems to me, Dean, that this pioneering that's being done, you know, whether you want to consider it or not, this might be something that other areas that we can make a model of our own about and say, this is what we did in Hawaii to do this. And you guys got your concerns. Here's a box full of stuff, and here's how to do it.
Yeah. That's what we're kind of hoping that we can continue this project and sort of develop it. Mm-hmm. It's taken us about a year to just kind of get the hang of it in terms of deploying it and retrieving the cameras. We've kind of pretty much wired now.
Have you lost any yet?
Not yet. and the thing is that
I'm not in charge of finding them. Otherwise, we'd lost.
Yeah, so when I go down, I have a little slate.
Yeah,
I've got them marked off, mapped out where I put them. So when I pick up one, then I kind of know the bearing to the next. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, I'm making a notation of which direction the camera's facing. So when Megan analyzed this data, not only does she know where the camera was, but she knows which way it was facing.
Yeah.
So when you talk about how fish move, so now you know that, okay, this school was seen here at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're seeing it move over here. So during that 1 hour of observation, you can actually see how the fish shift around. Plus, there's a 360 camera that I built that sits in the middle of this.
Yeah, boat. I was going to ask you that. I had heard that, and I wanted how does that work?
Yeah, so we've got eight GoPro cameras set up on a rig
in a cluster.
Yeah, in a cluster. Yeah, in a ring, and they're all facing outward.
Okay,
and after we retrieve this thing, I'll take them all, take all the cards out, and then software stitches all this stuff into a panoramic.
Yeah,
so what you're
fantastic.
Looking at, the middle of the panoramic is where camera one was facing. The edges of the panoramics where cameras, I don't know, 7 and 8 were facing. Mm. So you're looking at a full 360-degree circle.
You know, there was, on one of the last Shark Weeks, Mark, a thing of this one in study of a shark. And there was this big circle of cameras that the shark ate. I mean, you know. But what I'm saying is that down the road, our listeners and other people that, you know, are friends of the council or need the council for research, that must mean that at some point in time, this information is going to be compiled and made available. Even though it's a long-haul deal, what are we looking at in that area?
Yeah, so right now they are getting in the last dive for the year that they've been surveying. We've already started to compile the data, and we're going to be doing some analysis and taking a look and see species diversity, number counts, and those other kinds of things. I'm sure there'll be a lot of other things we can look at too. And Malloy will be, you know, our scientist guy is going to be.
But what about Dean? You guys are going to be able. I'm hoping that you're going to be able to use this as a segment. This, like, to me, like, is it, what you're doing is Hawaii Goes Fishing, but you're fishing for information.
We might.
I'd love that.
It's kind of hard to be the guy doing the work and actually trying to get documentation of this whole thing. But it's been a very educational process because we got to see a single location change over a year, and this year they had that bloom of fish.
Which surprised everybody.
So we saw thousands of Owama underneath the reef shelf, and the cameras can't see them because they're hidden, right?
Uh-huh.
But then over the years' time, as they grew, as they started coming out. Yeah. And then you get to see that change.
Mark, what was the decision-making process to do this in Moanalua Bay outside of easy access?
I think the key was partnering with the fishermen because the idea was to test traditional knowledge. And so we had to find fishermen who were willing to share that knowledge, like you mentioned in the very beginning, right? Empirical, some you're willing to share and some you're not.
Well, I think that maybe the benefit of doing it there is right now there's a lot of controversy going on. Who uses, who are the stakeholders? You know, who's in, what about safety? What about, you know, we got concerns for divers and power boats and all of this kind of stuff. And yet we got to realize that underneath all of that users are the fish, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. And, you know, that's a great area because it is it's easily accessible. The area is relatively protected. I mean, I don't think we had a lot of issues with regards to access, but...
Well, Dean mentioned, actually, let's talk about that because the best laid plans can be wiped out by bad weather or by everything else.
Yeah, and bad currents, rough weather and stuff like that. We had situations where it got a little bit of a challenge to get the cameras because now you got to swim up current.
Of course.
And then if there's a little bit of, if the water's too murky, you can't see the cameras.
Well, when you're going to do this glimpse, this snapshot, if you will, there's a lot of effort going into it. For instance, just out of curiosity, if somebody's now thinking, okay, this area was about 100 yards by about 50 yards, so that must mean it takes a fair bit of setup and a fair bit of knockdown. For what length of time were you planning? What length of time is the actual shoot?
It's the cameras. We let the camera sit for an hour after we deploy. It takes anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes to deploy them.
That's not too bad.
Not too bad. And then it takes another maybe 20, 30 minutes to pick them up.
So you're in the water there for a couple of hours.
Yeah, so we'll drop the cameras from the boat. We'll run off maybe about 500 yards and just wait and just let the place stay quiet for a while.
What other technology are you using? Because I know that it's not just an arbitrary drop the camera, that you've got the grid planned out.
Yeah, so you're using GPS.
You need to explain that because we're all fascinated about the technology part. This simply means that you could go back to the same COA next year and drop the camera exactly where it was the last time you were there.
Yeah, within a precision of about a couple of feet, maybe 10 meters or less.
How cool is that, Mark? I mean,
you got to be able to replicate your work.
Yeah, exactly. I think, though, that this goes a long way to sort of maybe sort of grasp what the bigger application might be later on. Obviously, this is a trial that's been, running for, like you say, a year?
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is there are a lot of other people doing similar work in different environments. And so, you know, with this, along with all that other work that others are doing, we can hopefully come up with an improved system to try and assess how much fish there are in the water.
Well, you know, we're looking now at trying to manage fisheries with local input and all of this stuff. Isn't this the exact sort of information that will help maybe really identify what an area is so we know what we are protecting or know what we are taking?
Yeah, and knowing exactly, you know, how much, having a better idea how much fish there actually are. When you do these surveys,
Let's talk about some of the other players that are involved in it, because you mentioned Malloy Sabater, he's the scientist, and you yourself, Charlie Ka'ai'ai, he's the indigenous coordinator. Right. Isn't this exactly what he's talking about? Maybe substantiating some of the things going on, say in Hyena or wherever there is, you know, discussion about who does what. I mean, what don't we have to quantify what's there to decide who does what with it?
Well, I think from our indigenous program standpoint, we've been for a while now trying to incorporate this empirical knowledge into the management that we do from the council's side. And so this is just on the ground work to help us, you know directly try and quantify that.
Well, I think, though, that, you know, and because if you're in the loop, Dean, this has been probably, it may be, although a daunting task, a big step towards the future. I mean, what you're learning now in this, as you invent as you go sort of a survey, is that after a while it's going to be, you know, here's a box of 10 cameras and instructions on how to do the grid and go look at your area.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're looking at trying to find, I guess, develop a standardized procedure that was kind of set from the get-go.
Yeah.
But then the actual process of doing this thing has been refined. The toughest part is trying to drop a camera on a spot. One guy is reading the GPS, the other guy is driving a boat, so, you know, we're constantly talking back and forth. Okay, go left, go left, you know, maintain your speed and okay, midships, okay, ready, drop. And so Makani's dropping the cameras. Teddy's driving a boat and I'm watching the GPS.
Yeah.
Because Teddy doesn't do a lot of GPS. He's an old timer.
I was going to say a lot of us. He uses marks. Even though I think... I go back to my days with Captain Rosa, who would be out in the middle of the channel and say, okay, right here. And he put the line down, come up with a big holy or something, you know.
Yeah, so he knows his marks, you know. And so the GPS is something kind of new to him.
Sometimes it's good to bounce the GPS off of his marks. He's probably a little bit more accurate sometimes. Well, Dean, nice to see you again. I'm glad that you were able to drop by and talk story with us. And I'd be interested, Mark, in continuing. You said that you were coming to the end of the first year.
Yeah.
When does it get evaluated as to what happens next year and where?
Well, we're starting to do the evaluation now of the data and information to see what we learn. And then from there, we'll reassess to see what's the next step.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, it's the next step that's going to...
But I'll give you one interesting thing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, before every dive, Makani, I think, goes and swims the koa and do the fisherman's assessment.
Yeah.
And, of course, the fishermen are looking
Interesting to see... If it is a parallel assessment, you know what I mean?
Right. But the fishermen are looking at eating fish eating, you know, the fish you want to eat, right? And so typically he's looking at the veke.
Where are the big ones? Where are the red ones?
You know? Right. Yeah. And so, but just taking a quick look at the data that's come out so far that Megan's already processed, just in terms of species diversity and numbers that she's counted, it's really interesting because it's ranged anywhere from in the mid-30s in terms of species diversity up through over 60 species.
Yeah, see, and that's what, Dean, you know, I get what he's talking about, and I'm glad we expand here for another minute, is that what I'm looking for and what you're looking for are different, but what the camera sees is everything.
They don't have that food or bias.
Let's say that I don't prefer tilapia, which I don't. But so I may choose to overlook 4,000 tilapia because I'm looking for one kumu, right, Mark? Right.
Yeah, because we're staring at the uku swimming by and you miss all these butterfly fish down below.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
They're all food, though. They're all part of the deal. And that's why this is pretty good stuff. The actual project, the intended duration was March or something of last year to April of this year.
Actually, May. We started in May.
Okay.
And then in April, yes. Yeah.
Great stuff. Anyway, it was to test the traditional knowledge. So far, knock on wood, Mark, do you think that the council is getting its money worth? And is it as valuable as you thought it might be?
Oh, we're learning very interesting things, even with this preliminary look at some of the data. Yeah. And also, you know, building partnerships with the community is important.
Yeah. Our thanks to Dr. Andy Rossiter from the Waikiki Aquarium for dropping in on Should You Feed Them or Should You Not? And, of course, Jody Bright on that Kiwala tournament. And to our friend Dean Sensui, keep your eyes open for what's happening as Hawaii goes fishing. And Mark Mitsuyasu, who's actually he can do the program by himself next time. I don't know if he'll be here. If you've got an idea of something you want to hear on the program, drop a line. Email the best way, themikebuckshow@aol.com. Themikebuckshow@aol.com. We'll get you plenty of fish. See you next time. Aloha.